Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Rob, R8XFT.
Vice Virtuoso.
Narad.
VS.
Welcome to Modcast 75. I'm Rob, R8XFT, and with me today are...
Narad the Forgiven.
FTLK.
Fantastic. So, this is the first Modcast of 2018, and also the first one since Rise and Fall has been released. So, both of you have got Rise and Fall, is that right?
Yep.
So, we'll talk about Rise and Fall first. What's your initial impressions from a modding point of view?
So there's definitely some nice things that we're able to access with the H system. I know that a couple people I've been working with have sort of been rejiggering everything to work with that. Not as much stuff as we would have liked in an ideal world, but it's a pretty good base to start with that we're still sort of exploring all the potentials that we can use from it.
Is that the Dark Ages, Golden Ages, that kind of thing that you're talking about there?
Yeah, so I know I'm talking to some other people that we can sort of check to see if this is in a Dark Age or a Golden Age. But there's not, like, a separate trigger for seeing if they're in a heroic age, for example. Okay. So that would be sort of something where we get good stuff, but not necessarily all the stuff we would want. So it'd be kind of hard to give a civ an ability that only happens during a heroic age, for example.
So I was definitely raging the other day because I was looking at the Dark Age policies, which I think are fantastic. Yeah. But they are literally hard-coded to a Boolean column, so there's only support for Dark Age policies. There's no Golden Age policies. If you decide that you're going to create your own set of new ages, which is theoretically possible, can't add any policies to that. So if you wanted to build a slavery / freedom mod that used a slave age and a free age, there's going to be no policy support for that.
For now.
For now. Hopefully that changes in the future. I would agree with Ceiling Cat, too. There isn't a lot of new features in Dark Ages. There's a lot of, I think, very good quality, very much liking the changes. But there's only about 5 different new things. Dark and Golden Ages, you've got governors.
Loyalty.
You have emergencies. You have loyalty.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Although, this morning, just to play a couple of the mods that Civitas have done that haven't been upgraded to Rise and Fall yet, played the base game, and it seemed a little bit empty without the things that have been added, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking, where's my points for picking up that, getting the village, or where were the points for destroying those barbarians, and I realised, of course, that wasn't there then. So it just seemed a little bit empty.
Yeah, I would say that even though the expansion pack may be in some ways sort of limited in its scope and what it adds, I think that what it does add is really important for sort of, you know, world building, immersion sort of thing. So it's the kind of stuff that when you don't have it, it's immediately apparent. You're like, wait, I'm missing something.
Yeah.
So I think they've done an excellent job, which I think was their plan to sort of build that story into the game more, especially with the timeline sort of thing.
Yeah, I love the timeline.
Yeah.
And I personally feel that Vanilla Civ 6 had a real problem, a drought, if you will, in the middle of the game. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the middle per proper, but kind of in the medieval era, once you figure out the barbarians, if you're not warmongering, you're kind of left, well, what am I going to do?
So, going back to the modding side of things then, Sukrutat himself has already worked out how to do some new images for the timeline, which is going to be very useful for us, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think it was Loogie put together a utility, actually.
All right.
To sort of, you stick in a picture, and it spits out a nice sort of in, it's got the right color scheme, it's got the right sort of blur to it a little bit.
Style.
Yeah, yeah. So we've been working with that a little bit to try and get some of the Civitas civs up, because we need one for every unique, so building a district, a unit, and because a lot of our leaders have sort of their own unique, we're sort of playing catch up there a little bit, trying to get everything, so you don't see like, wow, look at this great unit, and it's just a blank picture.
Hmm.
A little underwhelming.
I think that that's one of the things that when you're a game developer that's working on building a game and you want to support modding is you have to look at managing your burden in terms of what do I have to do in order to build a new, say, unit of mod. So in Civilization, obviously, I think the most common one is, if I want to build a new Civ, I have to kind of manage how much expectation you put on that. So, you know, my first inclination when I saw the new timeline was, oh no.
Yeah.
They just doubled the art requirements. Which Colonialist Legacies was always kind of art challenged. Never really figured out 3D models, and we certainly had a lot of trouble with other art. So the fact that Luigi's built a tool, or someone built a tool that just sucks that in there, is fantastic.
Yeah, it's been really useful. Sailor's been just sort of cranking them out, so now it's just the point of just putting them actually in. And the code doesn't seem to be too bad. It's pretty straightforward. You just kind of select, is this for a unit, is this for a district, and you just kind of put in whatever your code is for that, and attach the, I think it's a DBS file, and the game takes away from there.
Cool.
Excellent. That's really good to know, because one day...
One day we'll get it sorted, you and I. Yeah, I mean, I'm just getting into being able to recolor unit models and texture them, so...
Yeah, I'm just starting in that, too.
That provides us with a good segue onto your projects, then, doesn't it? What's the plan with the Berbers?
We've got a couple leaders planned, but the only one that's sort of in development at the moment is Dihya, also known as Tahina, the Queen of the Berbers. Some people might be familiar with her because when they were announcing, I think it was the second expat for Civ 5, when they were doing the teasers, they had one for Maria of Portugal, and everybody's like, oh my god, it's Dihya of the Berbers. And then it wasn't, it was Maria of Portugal. So that's sort of where I came into familiarity with this sort of historical figure, and she's just really interesting. So we decided to go with her for the base leader.
Mm.
So she's kind of the pre-incarnation of Tamar of Georgia.
Yeah, kind of a little bit, yeah. The other leaders that we have sort of in mind farther down the road, one is Massinissa, who is the first king of Numidia, so more Roman.
Yes, now that would be great.
And then the other one we've got is Husayla, known as Caecilius, who's sort of the person who took up the resistance against the Arabs before Dihya did. So it's kind of nice because they'd all be a different religion. So we have Dihya as Jewish, we have Massinissa as a sort of pre-Christian Berber belief, and then Caecilius would be Christian.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The idea with the Berbers is that they're sort of a trading, defensive sort of civ. So as it is right now, their UA, the civ ability, is called Tamazgha, which is what the Berbers call their land. It makes their trade units invisible unless they're adjacent to any unit. It gives them more gold and production for trade routes that pass through their cities, and gives them strong adjacency bonuses from oases and from building districts next to their unique district, which I might have to, that's going to be tested a little bit to see if it's OP. But their improvement is going to be the Fagara, which is kind of like an irrigation system. So that's going to help them really sort of get food from the desert, since they'll be biased to start in the desert. So it's kind of like the Great Wall, where it can only be built in a line, and it'll actually get food on its tile and adjacent tiles, but only if they're flat and deserty. We're still working out some of the how that's going to work in relationship, giving bonuses to perhaps being adjacent to hills or mountains, trying to keep it useful but not overpowered.
I was going to say, associate the Fagara with the Garamantas and the Jala from Civ 5, but I guess the same region, aren't they?
Yeah. Sailor Cat's been working, and a city-state sort of overlord there. We've been working on maybe releasing some Berber-themed city-states along with the mod. So Garamantes, their capital, was one of them. And the other one we were going to go with was the Saleh, the pirate haven in Morocco.
Wow.
And then the unique unit, what we're going with right now, is sort of a representation of the Tuareg spearmen. They're replacing pikemen in this case. They're coming a little bit earlier, about almost an era earlier, so they'll be a little bit weaker, but they'll gain strength in desert tiles and in friendly tiles. So you won't be able to go a conquesting with them really well unless you get them super early, but they will be able to sort of be a stalwart defense of your lands.
Right. So if we play this Civ on desert tiles, it's going to be more effective, is it?
Yeah, so we really want people to sort of cluster their cities around oases in the desert, sort of what Berbers did in real life. And then with Dihya, we're giving her some bonuses centered around mountains as well, because because the Atlas Range is sort of where she had her base of operations, and she is known for sort of sneaking her troops in around a mountain so they can flank an enemy and sort of leading resistance up into the mountains, sort of scorched earth sort of thing. So she's a very defensive leader. Right now what we've got, and this is one that's changed a couple times because we were sort of like, this is all going to be easy to code, and we realized there's not a way to check what the adjacent terrain is, so...
Really?
Yeah, there's no adjacent terrain type is, for example, and I haven't figured out a way to get around that. So originally it was going to be, when they're at war, all tiles adjacent to a mountain that they own will get production. But that's impossible to code, as far as I've been able to find. So we're giving it, the city will produce production for every mountain tile it owns. So it's kind of the same, kind of slightly different. So I'm still tweaking the numbers on that. Not sure if it'll be a percentage or if it's a flat number, but we're still working on that. And then she also gets a bonus for her units fighting on owned desert tiles. So really defensively oriented.
Sounds good.
I sort of took the lead on this one as part of Civitas. This will be my first full civ. I've done leaders. This will be my first civ. And the other guys have been super great about sort of, hey, this is how mod art works. And I was like, good. I have no idea how that works.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And this will be with Rise and Fall, compatible with Rise and Fall.
Yeah. I don't think we're using anything that's dependent on the DLC, so it should be useful for people who have the DLC and people who don't. With one of the other leaders, maybe with Matt and Nessa, we might do something with loyalty, but I don't think Dishio's going to use anything. I was planning on having her use, as part of her agenda, Wilhelmina's, but the way that Firaxis coded it, I couldn't take like half. I only wanted her to use the positive part, and it didn't seem to be possible. So it's currently just using, I think she likes people who keep their citizens happy is what she likes.
Good. I like that too. Coming back to some of your earlier stuff then, you did two Matildas, didn't you? The Matilda for Italy and the one for England, which are both very good. I played with them both. I think they're very good art and very good, but very well done suggestions and sort of a boon to the game. And what one of the things just to pick up was that we've talked about before is that now there are multiple leaders. Modders like yourself are able to pick on a modded Civ and add leaders to that too. And that's different in the community, of course, to what we've got in Civ 5. And more recently, Civitas then have done the Sassanids with two leaders, Boran being one of them. I can't remember the name of the other one.
Kawad, I think.
Yes, and something with UK, yeah, absolutely. And also you've done the Philippines. And you have done the Seleucids.
Yes. So Seleucids were really chimpanzees, sort of baby. Sassanids were definitely, that was a Sailor Cat working, it was sort of heading up that. Each project sort of has their own leader, depending on who sort of, like, it's their...
And other people help.
Yeah, we all sort of split the work. There's sort of one person who sort of leads us in a direction in this case. I think Philippines was perhaps the most sort of, I don't know, anarchic, if you will, didn't have a clear leader. That was a lot of sort of going back and forth, finding out which leaders do we want, which ones do we want to come out first. Everybody sort of was like taking their own leader and just sort of taking the base Philippines in a different direction. For example, the second leader for the Philippines was sort of my take on the sort of direction of the Philippines as a more sort of diplomatic, cultural Philippines as opposed to a trading one, which I think the base Civ is sort of leaned to in again culture with Rizal.
Yeah. Of course, there's a Taino as well, isn't there, if that's how you pronounce it?
Yeah, that was the sort of one that Chimp had actually started working on, and it was like, hey guys, I've been working on this. And we're like, wow, this is great. And sort of taking it, that the last little bit of tweaking the ability, seeing if there was potential for more synergy, and sort of refining that Civ. So that was actually fairly surprised to all of us when it came out, but we were super happy to jump onto that one.
Cool. There's the ones that we've mentioned. So far you've got Baran and the Sassanids. So you've got the Sassanids compatible with Rise and Fall, but the other ones aren't yet. Is the plan as soon as you can, basically, to get the other ones upgraded as well?
Yeah. I think we've already made the sort of changes that are required to, like, get the Civ to, like, show up, which is actually fairly not that difficult. It's just mostly changing the config file so you can actually select them. But we haven't really pushed that update yet, I don't think so, for most of them, because we were trying to get the art. Sassanids we did push just to sort of see if there were going to be any other problems, if people were having issues. Thankfully, it doesn't seem to be a problem other than the load order one that we've got. Sort of, there's that community fix that we're trying to push out to people so that they know what they can do to resolve that on their end. But, yeah, actually, Kalan Gitan is updated for Rise and Fall, but the Philippines aren't, so that's kind of a problem there. But, yeah, we are working on it.
Now, Civitas moved on to do other things as well. I know that Crazy Scotsman has done some estates, and you mentioned about city states for the Stiff the Berbers. There's been some resources as well, is that correct?
That is correct. So, yeah, so Pokeyo, I never tried to pronounce that word out loud before.
Okay.
He is a person who likes to just tweak the game, add things, sort of just a lot of small but important sort of tweaks. So he's got a bunch. He was the one who did the sort of expanding the sort of the Civ base game abilities.
Yeah.
The last thing that we've been working on sort of as a group was this resources expanded.
Yes.
Sort of in the same vein as a resource pack that Supertact put out. Sort of trying to add not overwhelming amount of resources, but something to kind of keep it fresh. So this one adds Electrum, Pomegranate, Cedar, and Penguins, which have been very popular.
Yes, and they look great. So if you do any more, just a little request that you do either Frankincense or Myrrh, that would be great.
We've been sort of polling both inside and a little bit outside the group just to sort of see what we're interested in doing, and I keep bringing up Frankincense and or Myrrh as a good sort of spice split. If you will.
That would be useful to me, of course. But pomegranates are very ancient, so those can definitely go in. Penguins weren't around in the Mediterranean, but they look great. any other plans for the Civitas group, then, that we've not covered already?
Yeah, we've got some more civs in the works, but nothing that's really sort of approaching finishedness, if you will.
Okay.
Crazy Scotsman's Jerusalem is going to get folded into Civitas. We're working on perhaps changing some things to get have all the right ball, maybe some new abilities, some new leaders. Mm-hmm. I believe that were already sort of planned beforehand, but sort of taking those sort of in-house a little bit and getting that group work on it, which it was already sort of a communal effort, if I recall. Crazy Scotsman was saying for Jerusalem that just so many people wound up helping, contributing to that. So I'm hoping to keep that sort of spirit of community alive in this project for Jerusalem and hopefully get some new leaders out for that soon as well. And then we do have some more leaders for Philippines planned as well. The leader art's all done. It's just sort of deciding where we want to take them in terms of like their abilities. So we had Lapu Lapu Kudarat. So he's got a sort of a more defensive play. I think he's going to have sort of walled city unique. And then we've got sort of one that sort of I set it on a whim and Chimp went out and whipped up a leader really quick. So eventually we'd like to get Corazon Aquino, so a bit more modern leader, some Diplo, I believe, focus is what you want to do with her. I think it's gold as well.
As a modder, I particularly dislike modern nations. I'm much more interested in indigenous peoples.
Mm-hmm.
But there's nothing that prevents one modder, assuming that they're on good enough terms, to make a modern leader for an indigenous. So that's really interesting to see the different leaders in different ages.
I think Philippines is a really a sort of unique example in that sense, but it's not the only example. But so that's if and when get Cory Aquino in there, it'll have a unique unit from the ancient era, right, that represents sort of the original colonization of the Philippine Islands, and it'll span all the way up until like the 1980s. So it'll really be sort of to stand the test of time in there. So we're pretty excited about that.
Tell us a little bit about how you got interested in Civilization and how you got interested in modding.
I started playing Civ 3. That was my first one. Sort of just a family friend had it. And I was like, this looks neat. Checked it out. Instantly fell in love, even though I was terrible at it. Because I just said that every city needed every building and then would probably go bankrupt. But it really sort of spoke to a love of history that I didn't really know I had at the time. I remember playing as Byzantines and thinking, wow, this is a wacky civ with, like, what kind of word is Byzantine? The Constantinople's outrageous capital name sort of awakened that sort of history nerd in me and look where I am now. So, but my first mod I published was actually not for a civ game. It was for Europa Universalis, but I had sort of been tweaking files in 3 and 4. Not so much on 5 because it's not really set up for modding a lot on the map that I had at the time. But mostly at 3 and 4, I was changing city names around because I was never happy with them, which is sort of the origins of my Rosetta and ICN mods for Civ 6.
I have mentioned this before on other modcasts, but now that you're on the podcast, I can say it to your face. In terms of building a mod that's supportable and easily supported in the future as the number of new moddable civs come in and the demand for it comes out, as absolutely amazing of a job as the Rosetta mod and the like are. It's a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. Why are you doing it to us?
But, yeah, I don't know infinitely how sustainable it is. I'm currently working on getting the new Civs for Rise and Fall hooked into the system. So right now it's just a big old trawl through Wikipedia looking for, what's the Burmese name for, you know, Washington? Or what's the Dutch name for some random Cree settlement? So it's a lot of trolling at the moment, but I did sort of have this thought of, like, okay, there's two things. I can either put the onus on me or I can put the onus on other modders. And I just remember how many sort of mods there were in Civ 5 that modders had to sort of support. And I was like, if I do that, then no mods are going to have support for it. So I'm just sort of managing it myself because I figured that was the only way to really make it happen. So the nice thing is that with every Civ I add, that's a bigger chance that the database already has that particular city I'm working with, which is nice, so it's kind of diminishing additions, if you will. And the hard part is just adding new languages. It's really the rough part.
But isn't it an exponential problem? Because for every someone adds, you know, if I add the Blackfoot,
yeah,
not only do you have to answer the question, what would Washington call this Blackfoot city or location, then you run into the problem of, okay, now what would the Blackfoot call Washington? What would the Blackfoot call London?
Yeah, so it's been a problem sort of already with things like the Aztecs in the Congo. And, I mean, Scythia is just a whole separate problem. So what I've set up, and it's not ideal, but it's right now, so for example, the Aztecs should, assuming the code's working, try and look for the Waddle names first. If they can't find anything, I've had them set up so that they'll default to Spanish names afterwards, just so people can see some sort of change when they're conquering as the Aztecs, as they are wont to do. It's always like sort of in the back of my head of, hey, if you play the Congo, don't expect every city to be renamed because I don't have that information. I want every city to have a name in as many languages as possible. So it's kind of like, I feel like if I feel like I'm close to something and I can't find a name, I'm just like, it's frustrating a little bit. But it's definitely a labor of love. I wouldn't be doing it if it didn't give me some sort of satisfaction. I kind of think of it as almost a mindless sort of work, just trawling through the databases looking for names. So it's kind of like an unwinding sort of mechanism, as strange as that might sound.
Yeah, I could get that.
What's nice is that, in a way, is that I think we're sort of running out of civs that I think are going to have sort of a global name coverage, so like Dutch and Korea. The nice part is that if I do add, for example, the Blackfoot, I don't really have to go trolling for names, perhaps, in like the Middle East, because that would be sort of unexpected. They'll mostly be relegated to places in North America, maybe a couple European capitals. When I get a mod, like Thule, for example, and I'm like, okay, how many cities realistically have Inuit names? And I can sort of pare down and try and just hit big cities or cities that are on the tops of the name lists so that if they're more likely to appear, I can try and look at those first. I was trying to prep before expansion dropped, and I was sort of pseudo-successful with getting things prepped before, but the Mapuche actually gave me a bit of trouble, and so I wound up having to scour multiple languages of Wikipedia to try and find Mapuche names for cities. So that was kind of fun. Trying to, in some cases, make educated guesses about what a Mapuche name would look like, but I didn't want to take it too far and sort of, like, just create new names. If I see a name and I don't know what it is, I tend to Google it, and if I, like, can't find it, I'm like, where is this name? Why doesn't it not exist? So I try and keep things, the names, in the sort of realm of tangibility, not trying to make them wholly different.
The Cree themselves, in real life, in real history, didn't follow the same course of history as the natural civilizations would. It's a civilization or a group who didn't have all the traditional buildings, etc. So, if that's the case, how would you have modded the Cree? How would you change it?
So I think it's a problem that's been, or an issue, that's been sort of endemic to the series for a little bit now. With the Huns in Civ 5, that kind of brought it forward a little bit. Even Scythia in Civ 6 sort of suffers from the same problem, where how do you represent a civilization that doesn't really have the sort of Western conception of cities? How can you represent them there? And I think it's definitely sort of a tough one, because you want to make it balanced. But you're removing a core part of the game a little bit, in a way, by not having them be city-based.
Civilization, really, at its core, is a board game about making cities.
Yeah.
So if you take away cities, can you even make the game work at all?
Yeah.
During the creation of Rise and Fall, there was controversy around the and the Kree, kind of the final statement made was the Kree didn't really participate in the four pillars of the 4X game, but,
yeah.
You know, exploration, expansion, exploitation, and extermination. And there were some statements that were made by members of the Kree community that, you know, we didn't do expansion, we didn't do extermination, which I thought was really kind of funny because my research to the Kree implies that for start, expansion certainly did happen.
Yeah.
On the flip side, because there is a question as well, would you change the Kree, not necessarily to remove cities and make them nomads, but rather to not participate fully in 4X? There may have been some extermination, but I don't think so. I think it was much more on the kind of like the Civ 6 loyalty side where people join us over time because we're good, cool, and because we're friendly, and because of the Kree habit of marrying into other cultures. But the one thing that the Kree really didn't participate in, to a large extent, is exploitation. So it's kind of just like, now I know this is really resented by a lot of people, but Congo under Mvemba, unable to build religions.
You can't create one.
So it is a question that if you were going to rebuild the Kree, whether you would have to look at a way of portraying non-exploitation of nature. Should they not have builders, but they would still need to have some way of using resources.
Yeah.
Right? But in a way that kind of portrays that, hey, we have this resource, but we're going to use it very sparingly.
Yeah.
It's certainly more mechanically possible from perspective of coding than, say, removing all the cities and making them all nomadic.
If you can imagine that the tribal group settles or builds a camp or whatever on a particular tile, and they have everything rather than buildings, they're all projects. On that tile, you're able to see what the landscape is around it that they can actually use, and that might help a particular project. So that project could be get them enough production to get a unit out and maybe get some more culture so they go and some more science or whatever. So they still progress. And then at the end of the project, it disbands and moves to another square.
Yeah, and I mean, the current idea I have right now, special civics that actually define what you get, we'll call it a city, maybe it has no borders, maybe it has a few borders, whatever. I build a project, I have a bunch of civic policies that say, when I complete this, I get, for however many points I got, so era score, based on me doing these particular projects, I convert that to whatever my policies tell me I'm going to get. But I think you're looking at an entirely alternative civic and tech tree.
Yeah.
We're
not looking at a small thing. We have to have it built by the community, for the community, in order to build these things. At that point, once we have the plan going and we have the ideas all together, someone needs to get on a plane and go talk to Ed Beach. I'm
not joking. Listen here.
And say, listen, this is what we're going to build. This is
you
what
better like it.
Maybe it was a modcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice DLC that would be.
Yeah. I'd buy it. I'd pay money for that mod.
To be fair, if they were to do that in any Civ game, this feels like the game that it would happen in.
Yeah.
They do seem to be sort of more open to sort of changing how the Civs work more mechanically. Although I guess Civ 5 Venice was kind of like a weird, it didn't play like the other ones. There seems to have been an attempt in Civ 6 to sort of explore the more the unfamiliar, more of the non-traditional, quote-unquote, in this game, which is kind of nice.
Well, there's a reason for that, and it was in one of Ed Beach's interviews that he was saying that, because he didn't do the base Civ 5, but he took over for Gods and Kings.
Yeah.
And he said he wanted to do Netherlands completely differently, and he wanted to do certain different things, but because the base game was coded in such a way, he couldn't actually do quite what he wanted. So with Civ 6 and being involved from the start, he could then code it so that he'd have the remit to do exactly what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
We feel your pain, Ed.
We do. We certainly do. It's not, of course, only the Kree and First Nations, but there are, even if you go to the ancient world, it would be great to get a different way for the Sea people. Don't have a city at first and have to attack a city in order to get started. That would be interesting as well. One of the new civs that's come out specifically for Rise and Fall is Sukritats Iceland, which looks quite spectacular. It includes an animated and speaking leader. What do you think of it?
I checked out the animations, sort of, he showed the in-progress sort of work, and then the sort of completed one is just, you know, outstanding. And so I've sort of been following the project since it started. I helped a little bit with the city names for Iceland, trying to give some more older names to the list. He found somebody on Reddit Iceland, to voice it, so that's pretty nice. And it's a nice friendly leader, looking leader, so
yeah.
Very cheerful. I think he's really starting to nail sort of Firaxis Civ 6 aesthetic.
Yes, I agree with that.
Yep.
And likewise, I mean, the other civilizations it brought out so far have all been fantastic, I think. But
yeah.
You can tell that there's certainly another step up. It looks good, it feels good, it plays quite nicely as well with the Torf Bear and the Law Speaker. And some really nice ideas that he's brought in. And so I really think it's probably the best one so far out of the modded civs with respect to everybody else that's brought out some fantastic stuff. And it's just so complete, you know, it really is.
Yeah, I was looking at the comments on his thread, and people are sort of like, this is Firaxis quality. This is something that I like his mods because they feel compatible with the game. They make it seem like it was part of the game, which I totally agree with.
Yeah. It's almost like the good old American Idol type shows where they say, you sounded like you were a guest, not one of the people that's trying, and we're all the people that are trying to be the American Idol, and he's the guest from that's been there and done it all. But
yeah.
In that sense, he does seem to be able to do quite a wide variety of tasks on his own mod, and, you know, he's really good.
It's a one-man show.
Yes. There are other one-man shows, but not quite so successful as Sukritat. But, yeah, they're all sensational. And you get the feeling that he can do anything. Now, I mean, really, I always said the key to being a really good modder is to be able to not need anybody to do anything for you. That doesn't mean to say that you can't use other people's stuff, but not rely on anybody is the thing to be. And he certainly doesn't actually rely on anybody, but still can help him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, Sook doesn't need anybody, but if somebody offers the help, he doesn't turn it away, and it can help him sort of focus on the other parts for, like, the leader. He doesn't worry about gathering city names, and that's one less thing that he has to do while he's trying to get this awesome leader head out.
Absolutely. And I haven't really had a chance to play the Burma, which he brought out just before for the standard civ, but looking at the payer there, for example, what a fantastic building, you know? He's obviously an art major as well, isn't he? So
you can tell
that. Very talented guy.
The modeling, yeah.
Yeah.
We've been sort of at Civitas sort of working on trying to get some models in the game, and he's been really helpful at sort of guiding us, like, oh, your model doesn't have any bones, that's why it's not importing here. So he's always been sort of willing to give information, share his sort of expertise. So it's one match, but he's also willing to sort of give back to the community, help other people out, try to figure out how to do these sort of things like he does.
But yes, Iceland, if you've not got it, please download it. You need to retreat. It's a really, really nice civ and looks very Firaxis. It's probably, it's definitely the most Firaxis looking civ that's come out yet.
Hands down.
I'm looking at Burma right now, too. I would also say that it has a very Firaxian aesthetic.
Yeah.
I think the only difference between Burma and also the Swahili beforehand, they look absolutely excellent. It's just that Iceland's got a moving leader head that talks. The other ones are static. So that's the only difference. The quality of the other ones is still outstanding.
The one thing I think sets apart Iceland from Burma, the sound quality is really good on Iceland, and the lip movement seems to be practice makes perfect sort of thing. And the second or third time around now, because I guess he did voice his own leader at the beginning for Clam.
Yeah.
So I think it's just we're sort of seeing the sort of maturation of those skills,
right,
of him sort of getting this down, right?
My only criticism that I would have for Siam, the animation sometimes looks a little like Sukrit is learning to animate, which is exactly what's happening, right?
Yeah, he'll go back and do another version, won't he?
Right, and I mean, like, Firaxis is obviously employing top-end animators that have been doing this for years and years, so some oddities sometimes around the hand movements.
Yeah.
But those are hard.
It's not that hard.
He has listened, of course, to my advice, Sukritat, which is to get the leaders to look directly at the person playing the game, which didn't always happen with some of the early Leaderhead. I don't know if he's listened to me directly, it's just a comment that I've made before, and I make it to other people as well. It was a big thing back in Civ 3 that the key was to make sure that the leader was steering directly outwards, so that he was looking at the person playing the game. And it kind of dropped off by about Civ 5, that people were doing these leaders that were looking away, looking disinterested. They've got to engage, I believe, with the player, and certainly he's definitely due now. So that's just a minor criticism, but there you go.
And it kind of makes sense, though, because in 3, they were sort of, the leaders were imprisoned in their little windows, so there wasn't a whole lot of places they could look. But with 5, it's almost like, now they can look everywhere. That's sort of reeling that back in and getting you back that sort of engagement.
Yeah.
There.
I have a final question for you then. We would imagine that Firaxis will bring out another expansion.
Mm-hmm.
What are your hopes and fears for that?
I want my Ottomans and I want my Byzantines, so I want them to be in there. I think one thing that I would hope that another large expansion would bring would be some more fleshing out the late game a little bit. It tends to be, I think if you look at like the technology and civic trees, it tends to be very military heavy, not a lot of opportunities for other sort of things. We're seeing just a little bit with the research, polar research station, sort of bringing in a little more engagement there would be nice. In terms of fears, I hope they don't break all my mods. That's my big fear.
That's guaranteed to happen.
We know it's going to happen.
An easy fix, hopefully. Like, the config file one for this one wasn't too bad. It was tedious, but it wasn't difficult. So hopefully they don't add like a bajillion more art pieces we need to do. So that would be my fear. But I like the direction that they're going. I like that they're increasing the sort of immersion, the storytelling of this. I'm optimistic.
Yeah, well, one thing that's interesting, picking up on the comment there about the late game, when people saw the video for Rise and Fall when it first was announced and they did the intro video as kind of part of the announcement, people thought that the World Council was coming back because of the end scene.
Oh,
So I guess that's a possible thing that they could do to liven it up, and it certainly worked for Civ 5, do something of that ilk.
Yeah.
So that could be interesting. I would like to see a bit more sway on what can happen with the civilization. So Civ 1 had the Civil War, which we haven't really had since. And now that there's multiple leaders, I'd like a couple of things that can happen, really. One is that if the system detects that an alternate leader is available for that civ, and, you know, there might be one in a couple of hundred chance of this happening, you know, in the game or, you know, whatever, very slim chance, but there is a chance that that other leader takes over half of the civilization and creates a new, so if it was Spain, creating a new Spain, and the old leader would look after a certain number of cities and this new one would look after a new lot, especially if it was on a different continent. Maybe within the loyalty and rebellion kind of thing. I would like to see all the civs and city-states kind of, I don't know, kind of couple up or merge or whatever into the idea that a civilization can start out as a city-state and then due to whatever circumstances get another city and start becoming an empire. Or alternatively, an empire that is reduced right down to its single city could potentially become a city-state and act in that way. If it was played not by the player, you know, if it was an AI civ. So there'd be some sort of a almost rise and fall again of the empires where it was a bit more fluid with what actually happened with the full civilization, if you get what I mean.
Yeah. I think definitely back to Civ 4 when they had the sort of vassalization, the colonial sort of separatism, I think that'd be really interesting to bring back.
Yeah.
So for me, I think two things. Nomad support. We've talked about it a lot on this.
Demand it.
The second thing is, I'd like to see a world council. I think right now it's actually the groundwork has been laid. I think there would need to be some new systems. I don't think that it would be wise for a modder to build a world council now. But the way I envision it works kind of like this. Era score becomes World Council score. I think we can put some moments on there, and I think it should penalize you for Dark Ages and possibly penalize you for Heroic Ages, too, given the way the world works these days. But what I do think would be great would be that everybody gets kind of a clout score, an influence score, based on era score total, which yes means that, you know, I might have like 700 influence right now versus somebody else who has less because they had less era score. So it would be a little messy, possibly double the effect of modern era choices, but then have the different teams vote on global policy cards.
Oh.
So we have a pool of global policies to enact. Possibly have those global policies unlocked over the course of the game by different things that you did.
Yeah.
But you would then, you know, enact these global policies that would affect everyone. The global policies should have some sort of ability for you to ignore them, but that should then unlock Cass's bellies. So they shouldn't just be like, everyone gets the following power.
Yeah.
Or maybe that could be just one of the agendas. We could unlock up Cass's belly against people who do X. That could be a policy.
Yeah. So something more dynamic like Civ 4's kind of UN thing, where I think there was the ability that you could refuse to do things rather than 5's, where I think you just had to do it. It would be interesting to tie in perhaps the World Congress with the sort of new alliance points that they've introduced. Sort of like how you rank up your alliances, and maybe that can also be appropriated there to sort of the reputation of like block, if you will, internationally. So that'd be kind of maybe interesting to do.
Yeah. I like the idea you were saying then, right? A neat idea. And one that would be, again, very moddable.
Points for that.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Support the ongoing Polycast Patreon campaign.
Collective achievements.
Personal incentives.
Month-to-month commitment.
For more information, visit thepolycast.net/Patreon.
Calling today, in North America, the number is 301-637-7659. In Europe, 44121-288-7659.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Modcast, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Thanks for dropping by Modcast today, Modcast number 75. I'm Rob, RHXFT. Joining me today were...
Nirai, the Forgiver.
I'm feeling cat.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks, everyone. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Whatever the equivalent of podcast's version of movie magic is.
Yeah. Well, if you at all listened to Podcast 74, Dan was a... I commented on the Sifanag spread that the first question Rob asks of Crazy Scotsman is actually, like, pieced together from six different parts where Rob tries to get that question out.
Uh-huh.
Dan makes it sound like one cognizant...
One cohesive thought.
Yeah. If you listen to the background sound, like the air sound, you can hear it clipping.
Yeah.
But besides that, it's like pro work.
Air for worker.
Because Rob was actually there for about 10%.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering.
I was here. We don't have enough time to unpack the differences between Canadian American and English.
Okay.
The difference between whatever Rob speaks and whatever the Queen speaks and...
Is there much?
It's exactly the same.
Well, except that I'm the Queen just talks about modding.
Maybe it's in mod, but we just don't know.
Well, she does. She's so annoyed that she's not in the game yet. When we introduce, which order do you want to say your names in? There's only two of you. Shall we do it in alphabetical order for you?
We usually do alphabetical. So I'll go around.
Okay, and then you, Chris. We'll call you Stealing Cat on here, shall we? So people know who you are. Right, okay. So, welcome to Modcast 75. And with me today, I'm R... Oh, I'll start that again. There's a lot of good stuff with the mod as well, for those of us who steal.
Which is all of us.
Yeah.
Hopefully Danny raises my comment and just puts it in the outtakes.
Yeah. Is there anything else that either you want to discuss on this modcast?
I promise I was in a debate with Stealing Cat about using Colonius Legacy Civs.
Oh, yeah, for Philippines, yeah. I came in about halfway through the project, so blame Chimp, I guess, is probably my advice.
Good answer. So that you can only propose ones that you actually have. Sorry, there's a cry in the background. Then
just realized the Wabanaki aren't in the expansion.
No, he's realized he's locked out of this room. So
all right. Thanks for dropping by Modcast today. Joining me today, I'm R8TechSFT, of course. Sorry, I'll start that again. Recording 17th of February, 2018. Civilization 4 and 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.